Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how are you doing today?
I do like the way you deliver without actually being in Japan. You sound a little bit like Steve Brule. Brule's rule.
You should be used to it. You should be used to it now, Pete. It's been like 2 years or something.
Where are you right now? Are you kind of you out and about? Are you staying in a hotel at the moment? Because obviously it's very late where you are and very early where I am.
So I am in a hotel in a place called Izu. And Izu is a peninsula that juts out of Kanagawa, just quite near Mount Fuji. And we're on the last day of Journey Across Japan 2, Escape to Mount Fuji. And as to whether or not we've seen Mount Fuji, I will not reveal because I don't want to spoil it. But
very binary,
it's been a good trip so far. It is either a yes or no, but we haven't had a lot of luck with the weather. The weather has been just dreadful. I think I mentioned on the last podcast, we hit a typhoon. Typhoon Chan Hom turned up and brought clouds and rain and crappy weather. And it's a bit, honestly, the weather's been really disappointing. It's meant that we've not seen a lot of the things I wanted to see. Like, we drove through the Japanese Alps and we saw nothing except some clouds. So it's not been a great start. But I think it could go either way, right? If I see Mount Fuji, great, I'm happy. But if I don't see Mount Fuji, it'll be a funny joke and I'll be really bitter. But I think people find it amusing. So I think either way, we kind of win. What do you reckon?
Yeah. I mean, you've been to the deserted buildings without me, Furious. You've managed to sort of cover a lot of ground in a car, because turns out cars are quicker than bikes and more fun when it comes to recording stuff, and just easier to kind of. Yeah, have you done any sort of things where you've gone hard off and bought like a little remote control and modified your car at any point?
It's funny you should say that. We did actually do that. Yeah, kind of pimp our car style thing just today, actually. We were given 1,000 yen each and went into Daiso, the 100 yen store, and had to like buy things to make like something for the car. It kind of went all right, but to be honest, we were in such a rush that it didn't work as well as I'd hoped. We tried to fit in so much with Journey Across Japan 2 because we only had 6 days to film it, right? And we did have a car, so you could cover a lot more ground, but we still tried to pack in an awful lot of things. And as you said, the first part of the trip, we had the abandoned Love Hotel. We had some weird, like, abandoned, forgotten 800 statues in a forest. We ate some insects. It was all rather action-packed. And in the last few days, we've done everything from stay in a private capsule hotel, which you would love. We basically found a capsule hotel inside a shipping container, and you're able to book the whole thing. So it was Joey and I with 10 capsules. We could choose which one we wanted to stay in because we had the whole room, right? The whole building.
Oh, nice.
Like Airbnb. That was good. Yeah. We stayed at an onsen in a wonderful town called Gero. Gero, which is also the word for sick in Japanese. Gero means sick, but different kanji characters, so it's all right. And in the hot spring in question, we had a log a 1,000-year-old log that had been carved out and turned into a hot spring, just like they just fill it with hot water and you can sit in it, in the 1,000-year-old log. It's your dream come like true, isn't it?
What, having a bath with a load of weevils? I'm there. I'm for it.
It's a 1,000-year-old log. It's a nice log.
Well, I hope they varnish the inside of it so it's not penetrating the 1,000-year-old log.
It wouldn't have lasted 1,000 years if the damn thing wasn't varnished. It'd rot, wouldn't it? A rotted log.
Well, it might have only recently become a log. It, you know, reached its loggy destiny after being a tree for 1,000 years. I don't bloody know how
reached
old
its
trees
loggy
can get.
Destiny. Loggy destiny. That's my new favourite phrase. Yeah. No, it's really nice though. The loggy destiny was way better than I had imagined. What else did we do? Oh, we came across a British theme park, no less. An actual British theme park that I'd never heard of. I don't know how no one's ever talked about this, but it's like it's kind of like a small village they've built. It looks like Stratford-upon-Avon, the town where Shakespeare's from, right? They've got these kind of Tudor-style houses, and it looks really nice. And there's just the Beatles playing everywhere. There's just Beatles. They've got a double-decker, red double-decker bus, London bus.
Lovely. Whatever,
going to Penny Lane, the Beatles song. There's a Beatles reference at every turn. They've got a working train that goes around the village, working traditional British train. It was mental, and I don't know how no one ever told me about it. Like, we talked about a few months ago, we talked about British Hills, right? The kind of British castle, the British village in Fukushima, where they teach people English and things. But we tried to get in there and film, but they were like, no, we don't want you coming here. So screw you, British Hills. Damn you. But we were able to get into this one. We were able to film it, and it was magical. And I think it's going to go down pretty well, to be honest. And finally, on top of all that, we also found a gigantic pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Japan, in the center of Japan's mountains. It's a gigantic pyramid. And are you jealous yet of this list, Pete? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I am. I'm furious. There's a lot of variation here, to be quite frank. The big pyramids. Capsule hotels. I mean, how does a private capsule hotel work exactly? Like, I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, it was kind of a bit like an Airbnb, I guess. They've taken like 4 or 5 gigantic shipping containers, stuck them together, and turned the interior of it into like a capsule hotel. And you can rent rent each one. It comes with 10 capsules.
Right. I you'll have to send me pictures, or I'll have to bloody wait until the video's out. Is that going to feature on the video, like, presumably? Yeah, I will.
We've got an extensive video on it because I think, as I mentioned before, you know, capsule hotel videos always do so well. Everyone loves capsule hotel videos. So this is going to be the video that hopefully gets the series some attention, shall we say, because the other ones are just all a bit too bonkers. Maybe the Abandoned Love Hotel. That could work.
It's spooky.
It is. But no, so far so good. As you can tell, I'm a little bit tired because it's been intense. It's kind of like the last journey across Japan was a 46-day project, right? With 28 episodes, I believe. And this has been kind of 6 or 7 day project with 6 videos. But it's almost kind of more action packed than the original journey across Japan. We tried to pack a lot more in because we've got a car. We can traverse a lot more land and a lot more area. Yeah. So yeah, it's been intense. So I'm battered. And I'm glad it's over in many ways. I'm glad it's finished. And I can't wait to see the videos. And if you're wondering when it's coming out, Journey Across Japan, Escape to Fuji will launch on the last week of October, around October 24th, around then. Not the exact day necessarily, because I tend to say it's going to be this day and then I fuck it up. So fingers crossed.
Next Saturday, we're talking. That's what you've got. For the first episode, you've got 5 days to edit it, Chris. And you better not let us down, I've decided.
Yeah, the bar is high. The bar is high. Yeah. Okay. We turn our attention to the story of the week. We've got a story from Dan from Brisbane. And Dan's story of the week says, "Hey, Chris and Pete, I went over to Japan for the first time last year in April on a solo trip. I'd always been interested in the country and I'd been studying the language prior to heading over for about 6 or so months. I arrived in Tokyo late at night and managed to find my way to my hotel in Asakusa. Asakusa, where I was going to stay for a few nights. During my time in Tokyo, outside of talking to the staff at restaurants or buying train tickets, I found it pretty rare for anyone to strike up a conversation. A big reason why I wanted to go to Japan was to immerse myself in the culture and practice my language skills. So I decided to try and strike up conversations with people where I could. As an introvert, this was pretty exhausting for me. A bit later into my trip, after some miserable failed attempts, I was heading down to Osaka on a bullet train from Tokyo, and I was sitting all by myself for a stop or two until an elderly Japanese woman sat down next to me. It took me about an hour to build up the courage to say konnichiwa, hello, after that initial hurdle. But we suddenly had an amazing conversation for the remainder of the trip, albeit most of it was just me nodding my head and saying, so desu ne, yes, isn't that right? I probably only understood about 30 to 40% of what she was saying, but she told me to avoid Kyoto during the Golden Week and instead visit Otsu, which is a city town just outside of Kyoto. And as she was getting ready to get off at the next stop, she handed me her bookmark she was using for her book. It was a bit of film strip from the Ghibli movie Howl's Moving Castle. I'm not sure of the sentimental value it held for her, but it's something I'll never forget. And it gives me a lot of confidence and motivation to keep learning the language. I guess I just wanted to send a message to anyone who might be thinking about learning Japanese or any language for that matter, and who might get crippling anxiety when trying to strike up a conversation. Put yourself out there, make a fool of yourself. You might get some weird looks or stumble over your words, but every now and then you get these awesome moments that make it all worth it. That or just get drunk and go to an izakaya. It's hard to be introverted when you're downing sake bombs. A story for another time. All the best, Dan from Brisbane. Thank you very much, Dan. And he sent in this photo of this nice film strip from the Ghibli movie, Howl's Moving Castle. That's great. And he's absolutely right. The best memories from these trips are always the ones where you kind of talk to someone. You met a stranger, you had an interesting chat, and then you parted separate ways and never saw each other again. And you know that all too well, don't you, Mr. Donaldson, from your many adventures around Japan?
yes, I do. I just spend my time waiting for someone to come over and go, American? Or English? And then we talk about football invariably. Or music. Music or football.
Have you ever received a film strip of any sort?
No, I've never been given a film strip. I get a lot of business cards, a lot of like invites to like WeChats, you know, of like people who like are cartoonists and stuff like that. But no, nothing. I basically just collect Facebook friends. That's anybody traveling around Japan, it's mainly just collecting Facebook friends, I sort of fear.
Naturally, so many people, like, you talk to someone for 5 minutes here and they'll add you on Facebook, you'll be friends forever. They love Facebook here. It kind of makes sense, I guess. It's the next step from, it's the evolution of business cards, is it not? In a country where everyone has to have a business card that, and you have to exchange them after the smallest conversation. Guess it's only natural.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
and receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Sure.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes to open the door to Amazon. Only we watch with Jesus the 25 minute first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
And I was like taking all this negativity onto myself, and I did. I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
One of the things we often talk about, I know you love them, Pete. You love Japanese mascots, don't you? You're a mascot fan.
Yeah, I'm a mascot fan. I'll take that.
And I covered it about a year ago in a video just revealing the kind of 10 craziest Japanese mascots that we could find. The most famous being Kubamon the Bear in Kumamoto, who's worth billions to the local economy. He generated sales of about £1.15 billion, which is about $1.5 billion last year alone from merchandise sales. And he's just this mischievous black bear from Kumamoto. He looks kind of cool, to be fair, but the economic impact that generating this mascot has led to kind of a boom across the country, where every town, city, initiative has to have a mascot, right? Has to boost the economy. What's your personal favourite, Pete? Any off the top of your head that you love?
Oh, there's one that's, I think it's a cat that's eaten too much tofu and therefore become tofu. I think I saw that one last week. They're just endless, absolutely endless. There was a Twitter page that a few people forwarded me of mascots trying to get off or on trains or getting squished indoors and stuff like that. I don't know why they made them so big. Maybe the from last week, the mystery mascot tampon probably be a more ergonomic shape for getting in and off trains and stuff. But yeah, they always make them too big. But yeah, the cat who ate too much tofu and became tofu, very much my favourite at the moment.
I love the backstories they have. I think my favourite mascot has to be Fuck Uppy, the egg. Fuck, there's a fridge company in Osaka, and about 4 or 5 years ago, I think now, they had this mascot, this little egg with wings, this happy egg, and underneath it just said Fuck Uppy. And the kind of the image of Fukushima with the image of Fuck Uppy the egg didn't go down too well, as you'd anticipate. And he was quickly got rid of, disposed of, but he lives on in my mind and in my dreams. Good old Fuck Uppy. Although, to be fair, it is pronounced Fukupi, isn't it, in Japanese? So it's just, but it does look like Fuck Uppy. But these mascots are big business, though. As we said, Kumon, $1 billion mascot. And there are 1,000 mascots across the country known as Yuru Kara. In Japanese. Ooh. And they recently held a kind of a mascot competition. Every year they have the kind of Yurukara competition to see who's the best mascot, and everybody votes. Tens of thousands of people vote in these who to see who the winner is, basically. And this one this year was held just outside of Morioka in Iwate-ken, just a little bit north of where I live. And the winner was a character from Iwate, I believe. Yume-chan was created in 2012, a year after the city of Rikuzen Takata in Iwate was destroyed by a tsunami that killed 18,000 people. Obviously, the tsunami was very bad, so they made a mascot to kind of commemorate him. And the mascot has ears that resemble the city's famous pine trees. So it's nice to have a mascot that actually means something like that, right? But unfortunately, they've decided, after all these years of having this fantastic mascot competition that's been going since 2011 now, they've decided to cancel it because it's become so overly competitive. It's taken away the magic of what the mascots are supposed to be about, right? Mascots are supposed to be about regenerating Japan, about showcasing great things. And basically, local areas across the country have just been spending so much money and so much tax money on mascots rather than doing like actual important things. Like, they've been blowing all their money on mascots,
building roads.
They've cancelled it. Sadly, and that's it. No more mascot competition. Have to make your own.
I mean, mascots are very much like, that shouldn't be your main business. You know, making kawaii mascots. You've got to actually govern as well.
I imagine
like our government, they just spend most of their time making slogans.
Well, I imagine they must be like really jealous, like eyeing up Kumamon the bear, right? Who's worth billions to the Kumamoto. I imagine a lot of local authorities are quite envious about that. Like, damn it, why don't we have a mascot worth billions? But particularly Asian tourists, I think from South Korea and China and Taiwan, they love Kumamon. They've got like Kumamon merchandise every turn. But no one's been able to quite, you know, do the same thing at the same level.
No.
What do you think about cancelling it, though? Is it a sad day, or is it a good step, a sort of step forward? What do you reckon?
I think that they shouldn't have cancelled it, but they should have like a limitation on how much money you can spend in your R&D or research and development on how
Research and development.
Well, they must do kind of to make decent mascots, they must do some kind of data-led research as to who's, you know, what's going to be the best, the kind of mascot. Do you like cats more? Do you like rabbits more? Do you like this? Do you like that more? It's got to be, surely.
Can you imagine, like, the local government, like, officials sitting around, like, we could build a new hospital, or we could create a mascot for the town, and that will be great, and it'll be of no value because of the 1,000 mascots in Japan, only one of them actually makes any good money. I remember you said research and development, right? And the first mascot that sprung to mind was Takapo-kun, and he is an inanimate runway from Shikoku to like the mascot of an airport, and it's just a runway with a really shocked expression, and it looked crap, and, like, come on. It's an airport. Like, have a plane. Have something that moves at least. Not an inanimate runway. God damn it. I got so angry about that. Even now, it just makes me angry thinking about it. God damn it. We did a better job in Kyoto, didn't we? On our
yeah, we made little yokais. Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. Fantastic.
Dear, oh dear. I think it's probably a good thing. I think it's a good thing. Hopefully they'll spend the money a bit more wisely. And Kumamon will maintain his position as the number one uncontested character and mascot of Japan. And now we turn our attention to the fax machine. What do we got this week, Mr. Donaldson?
We got a message from Hugo. Hello, Hugo. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Hi, Chris and Pete. Hugo here. Love your content and the YouTube channel. Respect for the dedication from Pete too. Oh, fair dues. And hope your holiday was nice. Thanks, Hugo. To Chris, do you find that your memories of the trips you did with Japan are strengthened by making them into YouTube videos? You always seem to reference the videos and if you can vividly recall where and what you did. Is this some elaborate plug for your channel, or do you find documenting your travels helps you remember? If so, I should definitely start documenting mine too. Kind regards, Hugo. It's a good question, Chris, isn't it?
It's an interesting point. I think it's a difficult thing with YouTube. You know what videos are going to do well, right? And the videos where I do travel and do things often don't do as well, from my experience. Like, if I make a video of me sitting in a room swearing and being angry and holding Kit Kats, it'll get a million views, job done. But a travel video I get really passionate about going somewhere, it just won't do as well, because travel is far less popular as a topic. Commentary videos always do a lot better. And that being said, though, when I look, one of my favorite videos of this year, and I've been fortunate to do a lot of cool stuff this year, one of my favorite videos is the Sapporo video, of which you're in it, Pete, because while nothing of any factual value really happened, I suppose we did kind of showcase the Sapporo Snow Festival and we had a bit of fun. Like, it was just a really fun trip with some really great people. Yourself, Natsuki, Charlotte, Jackie. It was a really good group of people and a really fun time. And in many ways, it was like a mini holiday, but I really enjoyed sharing that with the viewers on Abroad in Japan. Originally, that video was supposed to be just on the second channel, Abroad Perspective. It was kind of like a silly little vlog, but it turned out so well that I put it on the main channel and I really liked it. And I really like watching that back. Like, that kind of video is the sort of video on Abroad in Japan that I personally like to watch back. So I guess in that sense, yes, Hugo, I do like to... I think it does make the holiday better, or it makes it more fun being able to go back and rewatch it, because I wouldn't have remembered half the stuff we did on that Sapporo trip if I hadn't filmed it, like poisoning Pete Donaldson with takoyaki stuffed with spicy mustard. You must remember that fondly, Pete.
Yeah, that was a low point for me. In that I nearly had an asthma attack. But no, it was into it. But it is kind of like, because I don't film a lot of my holidays, like, it's actually quite nice to see, you know, if you with a partner, when you're on holiday, take pictures and stuff. I don't take a lot of pictures necessarily. But coming back from Sapporo, I was like, oh, shit, yeah, I forgot about that bit. And even then, it was only a couple of days that we spent together that time. So, yeah.
It was fun. Although I remember it was quite daunting as well, because the coronavirus was taking off, and I went to meet Pete in his hotel room, and under the bed we found some litter from the previous guest, and it was like a coronavirus testing kit. It was like a bunch of masks and some like antibacterial wipes and some painkillers. It looked like the last guest had been someone that had it. It was all a bit daunting.
Yes,
I remember
that's
that.
True, yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah, I remember that. Awful.
But it's one of the few benefits of being a YouTuber. You do get to kind of go back and relive those moments. So yeah, I would say if you're having a trip to Japan, like if you're coming here for 2 weeks, bring a camera, bring some sort of camera, or just your phone, and take photos every moment that you can, because honestly, you will regret it if you don't, because there's so many great things that will happen every day of that journey that you'll want to treasure. We got one from John. He says, hi, Chris and Pete. Greetings from the Netherlands. I heard the two of you talk about Japanese breakfast and complain that they weren't good and also that they're hard to find. What a load of crap. Pardon my French. I personally really like Japanese breakfast, whether it's natto, fermented soybeans, miso soup, rice with seaweed and skimono pickles, or some grilled fish. I really liked it all when I'm in Japan. It's not hard to find it either. All three major gyudon chains, such as Sukiya, Yoshinoya, and Matsuya, have it. And the best thing is it only costs 400 yen. And those it chains are all over the place, so they shouldn't be hard to find. If you're looking for a more Western-style breakfast, of course, you can go to Royal Host, Jonathan's, Denny's, or Cafe Gusto. Or just go to one of the many coffee chains like Dotor and grab yourself a sandwich. It might not be a Western breakfast, but it's still pretty good, and I highly recommend it. Other than this clear difference in opinion about breakfast, though, I love pretty much anything you guys create. So keep up the good work and get yourself some natto. Best wishes, John. A fair point, I guess. I'm pretty vocal about my dislike for Japanese breakfasts. It's my image of a Japanese breakfast is a bowl of rice and some leftover fish from the night before, because that's what a lot of families have. And I'm used to eggs, bacon, sausages, fried bread, mushrooms. And I just love it. British fry-ups, British breakfasts, full English breakfast is like my favourite meal of the day, and it's impossible to get it here. It's really hard to find. What do you reckon, Pete? Japanese breakfast?
I've had it a few times, and I think if you are somewhere that doesn't cook the breakfast that you like, I think it's your duty bound to eat something a little bit strange, a little bit weird, a little bit out there. So yeah, I completely agree with John. It's fine. I like having rice for breakfast. It's a nice change, to be honest. Congee, I'd sort of have quite a lot in China and sometimes in Japan as well. That's a nice breakfast with some chicken or some spring onions and stuff like that. Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I mean, I went to a ryokan the other day, the one with the 1,000-year-old log that we mentioned, and they had a really nice breakfast. It was kind of like eggs and salmon, a really nice salmon, and a little bit of bacon, and it was good, but like, I don't know, it's very hit and miss. I find some traditional Japanese inns do an amazing breakfast and others just, it's a really bad effort. It's a real hit and miss kind of thing. Yeah. Mm. Got one from Mark. Over to you, Pete.
Mark from the USA. Hey, Pete and Chris, been a big fan of your guys' work. Have you guys worked for quite a few years now, and you have most definitely spiked my interest in exploring Japan's culture and hopefully landscape someday soon post-pandemic. Anyway, onto my question. A few weeks ago, my Japanese language professor, albeit a nice woman, claimed that all Japanese women absolutely hated facial hair of any kind, making it sound like an evil omen of sorts to instill fear in all around you by not shaving for a few days. I found it this is extremely funny, assuming this must be some sort of joke, but began wondering if there was any sort of truth behind our statement. Is facial hair really seen as non-preferred when it comes to facial aesthetics? Best regards, Mark from the USA. Ooh, I've never had a beard in Japan, to be honest.
Well, you've got not facial really. Hair now, haven't you? You've got like a full Colonel Sanders kind of look going on.
It
right?
is a bit Colonel Sanders. I got the glasses as well.
Yes. you are becoming more Colonel Sanders by the day, Pete. I don't know if that's entirely true. What I do know is it's not rare, but it's not as popular to have facial hair here as it is, you know, back home or in the West. The main reason being a general rule of employment in Japan stipulates that you must not have facial hair. And the word for facial hair is hige, H-I-G-G-E, hige. But most industries won't allow it. Banking, investment, insurance, railways, airlines, buses, taxis, retail, restaurants, hotels. If you work at any of those places, you can't really have facial hair. You run the risk of losing your job. And I think as a result, people just keep a clean shaven face. That's the main reason. But I don't know about Japanese women hating facial hair. I'd like to do a little bit more on that and a little bit more probing and a little bit more surveying to work that one out. If you're a Japanese woman listening into this, what are your thoughts? Do you like facial hair? Not sure. But of course, my friend Jackie, who he talks about the Sapporo video, her husband, Nick, he sometimes has facial hair. I don't know if she likes it or not. I have to ask Jackie. She can give her expert testimony on it all, her expert opinion. We'll find out.
Well, I mean, I guess nowadays, I mean, presumably next year, everyone's going to be wearing masks all of the time. So I doubt you'd even be in a situation where you knew whether anyone had a beard.
Surely the mask just sticks out if you've got a big beard.
I guess so, yeah. I had like a little kind of handlebar-y kind of moustache that I was twirling with some beard wax, and I found that the mask really did inhibit the growth of the moustache, so I just got rid of the end handlebar-y bits and just went with a normal moustache and beard combo. But yes, it is good rather God. Colonel Sanders-y.
Colonel Sanders Donaldson.
Mm. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days to do it all over again, guys. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great couple of days, and we'll see you again on the Abroad in Japan podcast. Again.
He's melting down.
I need to get some KFC. All this talk of Colonel Sanders. All right, I'll go to bed. After KFC, Colonel Sanders.
Farewell.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.